Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Spanners, ready. And for the last race review of the season, I'm joined by Matt Two Rumpets. How's it going there, Matt?
It's going pretty good. I think we're getting a little bit punchy because it does seem like to me we've had 17 races in like 3 weeks.
Yes, it could be correct. I mean, but what do you expect in an 800 race season?
Yes, with 9,000 drivers. I don't know.
It's been good. Still. There's been a lot of drivers. Yeah. There's been 45 podium finishes this year. It's been absolutely crazy. And you might wonder why we didn't have a show title from Twitter. I looked through all of them and all of them were like, oh, snoozy dabby and stuff like that. And I guess I can't blame people.
Did you see the ones from the chat room?
No. Have you got any suggestions?
I have two.
Okay.
Christian Candler, title of the podcast, Alb Gone with the Wind.
Ooh, topical.
And Jeremy Hopwood with Perez strolls into the sunset.
Or does he? Yeah, that's interesting. Or does he? But look, I can't blame people. Yes, the race, it didn't quite kick off, but it didn't kick off for some interesting reasons. So that's good. But also the telly was constantly moaning about how terrible it was and how the tracker wasn't up to scratch or whatever. And they're entitled to their opinion. Social media seemed to be of that opinion as well. So as a group, our kind of group F1 think, found this race boring. And I get it. I saw the race in front of me. I saw the track isn't doing the trick. But Matt, I think one of the reasons everyone was so down on the race was because we've had such great races this year that suddenly a very kind of ordinary F1 race, just you go, huh? What? You mean three people didn't take each other out at the start? Where's the last minute safety car? Where's the mangled pit stop?
Yeah, and it is. I mean, I know I heard people saying this race is boring. I heard pundits saying it before and after the race. I heard drivers saying it. But watching the timing screen, I got to say, I was never really, really bored. There was always someone who was up to something or someone who had to get by someone. And there were always gaps to be measured to see, like, well, where's this pit window going to come out and stuff like that. So admittedly, I'm probably, at least in this respect, a bit of a minority.
Yeah, but from we can accept that from a viewing experience, it didn't spark. And I can tell that by the level of conversation in my house. My whole family was watching the race with me. And there were long periods where I suddenly went, oh, I've been on my phone, like on Twitter or on a Slack group or on WhatsApp. And I haven't been paying as much attention to the race. And the conversation isn't flowing as much. Look, we can accept that it wasn't an exciting race, but there were some very exciting reasons for it. So I cannot wait to get into the weeds. So before we go anywhere, just quickly, I know a lot of people don't listen beyond the final race review because we see the numbers every year for the season race review. So I just want to say goodbye to you guys. If you're not going to tune in, we miss you. Please tune back in for our race previews. We have loads of interesting stuff planned for the ramp up to the 2021 season. But I will urge you to come and get on our race review because I think we've got some really good debate points and some really good arguments. We have with us, and don't worry, Chris isn't even on that show. We've got Kyle and Ellen I think, for our race review. And then on Thursday, we're releasing an episode where we're collaborating with our friends over at the F1 subreddit as well. So we're going to have the editor-in-chief of that subreddit there, Flip Jakobsen, coming and joining us on the show. So we've got two great postseason shows for you coming up. I'm assuming they're going to be great. And then we're going to take our break for Christmas, and we'll see you bright and bubbly in the new year for the same off-season content that we've always produced and we've always enjoyed, because we are an independent podcast produced in the podcasting shed with the kind permission of our better halves and the generous support of our patrons. We aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. It's not just me and Matt, don't worry. We're also joined on a race review for the first time this season by Chris Stevens. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Spanners. Finally just snuck one in there at the end of the year.
It's been so stupid this year. It's just because we've been able to have you when there hasn't been a lot of motorsport activity. And because of the condensed season, anytime there's been a race, there's been a lot of motorsport activity. Therefore, we've not been able to have you. But it's for a good reason. You're working in motorsport.
Yeah, absolutely. I think since the season started, I've done, what, two news shows?
Yeah,
so this is probably my third one since the season started. And it's been a very, very hectic year. And I'm not going to lie, I'm a little bit glad that the motorsport is over for a little bit so that I can just enjoy some normal life.
Exactly. Concentrate on some sim racing commentary and do some great off-season content with us whilst I work hard to get to know your bosses and ruin your reputation so that you'll be available more in 2021. We're joined by our race analyst, Alex Jeansy Van Geen.
Van Geen. I pronounce it Van Geen, but we're not going to have this conversation again like we do most shows.
I like it.
No, happy to be on to actually discuss what may be one of the least exciting Grand Prix that actually didn't involve a Mercedes running off into the distance. That makes me happy that the less exciting race wasn't a Mercedes victory.
Alex, tell me about this track, because I've tried defending it in the past. In the context of this season, this race was hard to defend this track because I think some of its failures were stark when compared to the exciting races we've had at Portimao, at Mugello. In normal seasons, I guess Paul Ricard makes it look good. A non-safety car Baku makes it look good, but it felt very exposed in the calendar today and it didn't quite kick off.
It's really an odd one, because when you look at the track map and you look at the corners, first corner you got a fast sweeper, and then the second corner is kind of comes out of it off camber, so it generates a little bit of understeer, and then it goes into a tight chicane with a heavy stop, and then there's a hairpin with a heavy stop, and then there's a long straight with a chicane with a heavy stop, and then another heavy stop, and that should generate lots and lots of overtaking. But I think because of the corners preceding actually have quite a lot of aero wake, you can't get close enough in those particular corners to then take advantage of the big stops, which is a shame.
And now Matt's nodding his head in agreement, but Chris is shaking his head. So in a hot take, clickbaity kind of way, let's go to Chris Stevens for his hot take. Tell Jeansy why he's wrong and stupid.
So that you got that final sector where it's all 90 left, 90 left, 90 right, 90 left, which is not great for following, first of all. So you come out of that onto your pit straight, which is very short. So you get no time into a medium speed turn one. Again, not great for following. Fast couple of corners where it's pretty much easy flat, even in the races most of the time. And then some super slow stuff where that then spreads the pack out because of the concertina effect. If the corner before the first straight was quicker, you might actually get them stuck together for a little bit longer. Now, since DRS has come in, you can get the pass and the repass, but it's then difficult to actually make something stick. So thank God for DRS.
The big issue is because of the orientation of the circuit and because of where it's actually placed, that first chicane, if it wasn't there and they went straight to the hairpin, that would make a much better run for those particular corners. But because they haven't got the space behind that corner to give a long enough runoff, they can't have it going into there because the closing distances for that is too far. So if you lose your brakes, you're going straight into a wall at very close range.
Now, there's a little extra bit of alternative track layout there, which is a bit of like an S. So it's like an additional chicane, but quite a quick one. I almost wonder if they added that in, you'd actually make a little bit of an S's section in the first sector, and the cars wouldn't be approaching that what is currently a hairpin as quick. I almost wonder if that's the solution. I mean, there's a lot smarter people than me working on that.
I know the bit you're talking about, and I agree with you. But again, I think they'd carry far too much speed into that. So again, the runoff isn't big enough. That's the problem.
Okay, so we can all say that the F1 community isn't a massive fan of Abu Dhabi. All I will say with the negativity is, yeah, we get it, but you don't have to let it like ruin your weekend. You know, if you can't get into the pub that you want to get into, or you can't go to the posh restaurant, you got to go to your Pizza Express, Chris. You know what? You sit there and you enjoy your dough balls. You make the best of it. We can say it, but I mean, there's a lot of negative. I just get a bit like, it's like, okay, I get it. It's not perfect, but come on. It's an F1 race.
I also think if you say it, there's no need to keep repeating it. Like we get it. You're not entertained. You don't need to keep reminding us and bringing down the people who might actually be enjoying it.
Alex.
I also think the problem is if this was like somewhere in the middle of the season or five or six races before the end of the year, it wouldn't be so bad. The fact that this is the finale and it rarely produces anything decent apart from in 2016 because Lewis backed the whole grid up, it doesn't create that finale feel.
And naturally now I'm thinking about science. And everybody loves the experiments where the grand new thing is discovered and the new theory is proven. But the fact of the matter is a lot of science is discovering that things don't work at all. The race at Abu Dhabi is very, I think, trying and challenging for the teams, but in a negative way. And I just hold up the midfield today as a result. We had McLaren, we had Renault, we had Racing Point, and only one of them was able to even get close to their strategy. So I think it is challenging, but it tends to produce negative results, not positive results. So there's not the same drama associated with it, and therefore people slate it.
This race was also massively not helped by the early safety car, which just neutralized the entire strategy for 16 or 17 of the cars. And even the cars that went like alternatively, nothing really came of that.
Okay, so I think we'll get into a bit of a safety car stuff because it's rare for there to be. I think this is one of the few tracks where the odds are very, very long on a safety car. So you'd have made good money if you'd have bet on a safety car today. However, where a lot of races have been spiced up and elevated by a safety car, this kind of killed the conversation we were having on our Friday Patreon stream, Matt, wasn't it? Which was the difference between a one and a two stop. And really, like a two-stop could have made this race interesting. The safety car just killed all chance of that.
Basically, because it not only did it happen, it just happened at the wrong lap. If it had been lap two or three, it would have been one thing. Even where it happened was okay, but it lasted just long enough to really make all of the teams focus on a one-stop as the only way to get round the track fast. And we did see some interesting choices being made, particularly by Ferrari. And by interesting, I mean just like, what are you thinking? I don't want to get too much into it unless we're going to go there. But we did see how it played out, and it was luck, I think, as much as anything that saw Ricciardo do as well as he did on the alternate strategy, the only one to really get a positive result from it.
Chris,
is luck a pair of really, really slow Ferraris that backed.
Stop. Everyone stop. We'll get to the midfield battle. We'll find out where the race was won and lost as well. During the course of the race, I'm going to say that Albon contributed to Max Verstappen's win. I'm going to say that Bottas contributed to Max Verstappen's win. I'm going to say the Ferraris made terrible strategy decisions in this race. Ricciardo deserved better, and that Stroll could have been further up the grid. We'll also have a little look at that third place in the championship battle as well. But let's set the scene a little tiny bit before we get there, Matt. This race made very interesting by the Mercedes MGUK.
Indeed, we discovered, everyone remembers the massive flameout that Checo Perez had in the first Bahrain race or second or first one, right? He was in third place and then went kaboom. And then, oh my, look at that. It was tragic. There were tears on the podcast, as I recall. And then we remember in free practice, Russell like polluting the air with smoke from his engine. And it turns out that our friends at Mercedes high power performance up in Brixworth have a bit of a gremlin in the MG UK. And as a result, Mercedes announced via Toto Wolff doing an interview that they were actually reducing the usage of the MG UK for this race, which, if I understand it correctly, and there's at least a 10% chance I do, means that they weren't quite up with the normal power that they would be using during a race. I don't think it was a big, huge thing, but I think it might have been just enough, especially over the course of the race, to have an impact.
The thing is, Chris, this is what we've always wanted, really, wasn't it? It's like, can we not just nerf the Mercedes power advantage and everything will be better? Kind of true.
It's so bizarre, isn't it, to hear of Mercedes having reliability problems, the team that is usually so bulletproof and the team that doesn't take engine penalties. And actually, the only engine manufacturer this year that didn't take any engine penalties was Honda, which is very bizarre. Thinking a few years ago, they were taking 100 place grid penalties with McLaren, and even last year, taking those strategic grid drops at races that they weren't so competitive at. And so it's almost a bit of a reverse to what we're used to.
Oh my God, Van Gene's going to make a comment on engine technology.
I'm not quite so certain how much we're putting on the Merc engine power, just because during Ted's pit walk, he mentioned that he'd spoken to somebody at Mercedes and said it was only worth about a tenth of a second a lap. They had other issues this weekend that was actually costing them the time, not the car.
Well, you've angered Trumpets, right to reply.
So first of all, a tenth a lap times 55 laps is 5.5 seconds. Not insignificant if you look at the gaps at the front. And second of all,
Alex,
which exactly were the other issues that this person mentioned? Because now I am curious, because I didn't see that.
I think they were having tyre issues and balance issues on the face of it. But the thing is, how far ahead did Max finish? 10 seconds, 12 seconds ahead?
Yeah.
I also think Max was probably chilling quite a bit. I don't think Max was pushing hard.
Right. So just real quick, coming back at that, slower cars have less downforce. Less downforce affects the balance and also the usage of the tyres. These things on a Formula One car are always, always connected. I'm not going to say that's 100% of why we saw them slower this weekend. I mean, it's certainly Hamilton, you know, you've got a sort of a special exemption there, but it certainly played into it. And it was not an insignificant detail in the weekend, would be my argument.
Both drivers definitely said, especially on the soft tire, that Red Bull could make it work better than they could. Whether that was a byproduct of Pirelli using the softest tires in the range this weekend, for whatever reason, they couldn't get it to work. There was also a question in the chat room, I think it was from Philip Allen, asking why the pole position time was slower than last year. And I think maybe Mercedes not being at 100% contributed to that.
Maybe.
But of course, there was also no support races. So there was so much less rubber on the track compared to when they have the Formula 3 and the Formula, well, they don't normally have the Formula 3, but the Formula 2 and I think the Porsches as well, usually.
And a shout out to Philip Allen there, who helps us out greatly and keeps the posts and contents up and race comment feeds and such like in our Facebook group, if you want to go over there. It's a feisty old Facebook group. For a Facebook group, it's pretty good, but still... Thank you very much to Philip and the mods for keeping some kind of rein on that. Matt, quick one.
I just wanted to follow up with talking about the soft tires. To remind everybody, these tires are very thermally sensitive. And that getting them to the right temperature, depending upon how your car is designed and what it is inclined to do naturally, can be a bit of a challenge. So in cooler temps, as the night goes on.
Yeah, it's a valid point. Yep.
You could see the Red Bull having an advantage on the soft tire because they're able to get it into the window easier and better.
I just want to avoid this getting into a tech time too much, A, because I can feel Alex and me losing our grip, and also because it's a good opportunity to ask Matt to nod and say, is there going to be a tech time season review, a tech review?
Yes, I have not talked to Summers at all, but I'm happily volunteering him for that. Woo-hoo! In the very near future.
Well, in that case, maybe we can pre-record that and have that in the time off that I was going to have between Christmas and New Year. I think a lot of the Mercedes time difference, especially in the 44 car, Alex, can be attributed to the scientific notion of conservation of motion. And I don't know if you're aware of that. For example, if you're in space and you have a stone and you throw a stone forward, you will go backwards in the other direction. And I think Lewis Hamilton, with the force of his coughing and sneezing and such like, was actually decelerating the car during qualifying. He coughed in both the qualifying, post-qualifying interviews and the post-race interviews. I'm not criticizing. I'm not like, how dare Lewis Hamilton cough? But clearly, you know this global plague we've been having? He had that. And lad didn't look 1,000% well. It's his car. He had every right to get into the car. He was negative. He wasn't putting anyone at risk. But clearly, he was still a bit unwell.
Something I do in my day job when I was out seeing people was reading body language. And the body language from Lewis, he's normally chest puffed out, head held high, is the way he normally stands in front of the camera. There was none of that this weekend. His shoulders were forward. His eyes were down. He just didn't seem like the Lewis Hamilton that any of us actually recognize from any stage in his career. And I remember seeing him on Friday and I was like, he's not happy. And then I thought he looked a little bit happier this morning in an interview that I saw, but you could see after the race, he was destroyed. He even said that he was absolutely exhausted because he's just not 100%.
It's very clear that Lewis was not running at 100% this weekend for obvious reasons. For him to have done the job he's done and do it extremely competitively as well, I mean, only a few seconds behind Bottas at the checkered flag, and only it was less than a tenth covering the top three, which Lewis was third in qualifying, is astonishing when you really put it into context. If he was, struggling more on Friday compared to today, then obviously at that point he's driving a suboptimal car. Because he hasn't been able to prepare it the way he quite likes. And it's like he was trying to hit a moving target all weekend. So contextually, very strong race for Lewis.
And Ham Fosse, don't come at us, because blue on blue, me and Alex are big Ham Fosse. We're not criticizing Lewis Hamilton, but Alex, like, driving Formula One racing cars is really, really, really hard. And you have to train like loads and loads. And Lewis Hamilton is like, he's like the Schumacher of his time, almost in physical fitness. I know there's a lot of fit guys out there, but you would imagine that his physical regime and ability is right up there with the very top F1 drivers ever. So if you're even 95%, that is going to affect you. It's going to.
You know, and adrenaline can only carry you so far. And also, Chris makes a really good point about setting the car up and things like that. I bet he wasn't at full attention during a lot of the briefings and things. And when it came to setting the car up, he was probably not putting his 100% in. He was probably going off for a nap because he felt so terrible. So if you can't get your preparation for the whole weekend correct, you then go into a race with bad balance, which he complained about all weekend, and then you can't get it right, you can't drive a car for 55 laps with poor balance.
Okay, so Lewis Hamilton did quite well. You know, he did fine. He had a reasonable race. He finished third. He was like just behind his teammate. But the chat room is suggesting, someone said, well, why drive if you're not 100%? Well, you know, it's his car, it's his spot, Chris. But also they're suggesting, probably correctly, that, well, Russell's done pretty well. Well, I don't need to see him in my seat this race.
Yeah, but also, if he can do the job, then let him do it. Tell that to MotoGP riders who literally go out and ride and risk their lives while they've got pins all over their bodies fixing the bones they shattered a week ago.
And they're seen as heroes. Alex, quick one. Let's move on.
I also think the reason Lewis would have wanted to do this weekend, it is the last race of the season where he's matched and beaten the all-time win record. He has matched the driver's time, and he wanted to go and do those donuts and celebrate his season, because the season has been about him. But again, the whole George Russell thing, I think the George Russell thing has done more damage to Bottas than it has done to Lewis Hamilton.
Oh, okay. But with regards to those donuts, I mean, a very early award to... We don't normally do this, but comment of the week, just in F1 terms, has to be to the Red Bull team. Mercedes posted a tweet saying that, oh, look, they were sending these cars into retirement in style, doing their donuts. And the Red Bull team tweeted, what do you mean retirement? That's next year's Racing Point. Come and collect your car, and tagged Racing Point in that tweet, which I died. That was great. So comment of the week for the Red Bull admins as well. But this is the time that we turn to Matt Trumpets. Oh, yeah, that bumper slowed things right down. And we ask Matt Trumpets where the race was won and lost.
Indeed. And this week, as almost every week, the Strat proved to be absolutely crucial. Mostly because even though Verstappen got off to a fairly good start, Bottas had him, and it looked like he really, really was going to take him through the first complex of turns. But Verstappen was able to hold him off and take the lead, from which he never relented. And likewise, I think Hamilton was also had a bit of trouble at the start, and briefly Norris may have been troubling him, but it was not as much of a thing as they say.
I missed the start. We had a conversation on Friday. I thought the race started at 5 p.m., I think, because the last race started at 5 p.m. So I thought this one would as well. And I realized I was scrolling through my phone and people were talking about it. I sent my son down. I said, right, based on the order of the people in the race, tell me whether we should wait till later or jump and watch it live. And he's come downstairs. He's looked at the order and gone, oh, that's pretty much the same. They've lined up pretty much the same. He's gone, now we'll watch it now, which is probably the right call. But watching it on the replay later, I mean, Bottas was what we would now characteristically describe as a little scruffy. But perhaps, Alex, I think Hamilton, not as clinical attacking and pushing. I almost sensed a little bit of a vibe of, nah, on you go. And people in the chat suggesting that perhaps Hamilton's job this weekend was to protect Bottas's second place in the championship. I can't quite see that myself. But from a team point of view, maybe they said, let's not get in Bottas's way. We want that second place.
Yeah, I could see how that would be. But if you look at the attitude of Lewis's car through a lot of it, he wasn't attacking. I don't actually, pretty apart from that one lap where he touched the rumble strip on his qualifying lap where he damaged the floor. Apart from that, I don't think I saw Lewis ragged all weekend. I just don't think he was bothered. I think he just wanted to get the season done, get it over with, maybe protect Bottas. I don't think he cares. I think even if Bottas had dropped behind Lewis, I don't think it would have affected it. And I don't think Albon would have got him. So I understand the mentality of it, but I don't think it's a thing.
All right then, Matt. Well, back to you. I think what we haven't noted so far is the McLarens and their performance in qualifying as well. Norris qualifying fourth alongside Lewis Hamilton was absolutely fantastic. A great driver pairing. They had a good weekend in general. But what they have done in a lot of races is hustle a little bit on the early laps and make a little bit of a nuisance of themselves. And so Hamilton had to at least fend him off, even if ultimately, you know, the McLarens weren't competitive. Chris.
Did anybody else get the feeling that if harken back to the first Bahrain race, for example, where Lewis and Max just drove off into the distance, they were really, really pushing each other, left Bottas well in the dust. Does anyone else get the feeling that if Lewis were 100% this weekend, we would have had a race like that between those two at the front?
I don't know. I think the track might have seen to that.
Yeah.
We could always add it to woulda, coulda, shoulda later on.
We will. That's our new segment with a theme tune. Now we've got to come up with it. Now, do you know what? Chris is always good for a theme tune. So Chris will impromptu come up with a coulda, woulda, shoulda theme tune to backing music in real time on the spot. But let's continue with where the race was won and lost. So we line up pretty much through that first stint as we were with Verstappen, Bottas and Hamilton. And where is Albon at this point?
I want to say about lap six, but I have to check my notes, past Norris. And that was important. And the other important pass that happened that's not part of this discussion, but will be part of a later one, would be Gasly getting around Kvyat on lap eight. But in essence, as you say, it was a remarkably non-crashy start to a Formula One race. Usually there's at least someone like driving off the track, spinning around, leaving carbon fiber all over the place. It was actually a pretty staid affair. And you might get the... I don't know if the team principals give them all the talk. All right, lads, it's the last race. We really don't want to have to pay for anything more than is absolutely necessary here. So let's be a bit more careful. But it did seem like that sort of talk might have been had. And then, of course, we get to the tragedy of the race.
I was going to skip by it. Yeah, look.
This, yeah.
Go ahead. Well, no, well, look, Perez chuntering out of his potentially last race. is potentially sad, but as a Perez fan, I am not sad. I think there's news coming around the corner. It might be in line with what we've been talking about for the last 3 months. But then again, I guess it might not be. So we won't dwell on that. We'll address that in the week. But we believe as well, we have believed for some time, that Perez to Red Bull is done. So not quite as upsetting as the commentary was making out. Oh, no, he didn't get the chance to do his last race and do well at the thing. It was interesting for the race because it was kind of a little reset, because Verstappen looked comfortable out front, which was nice to see in a way. It wasn't the Mercedes lining up line astern, biding their time, hunting them down, waiting for their opportunity to pounce. It wasn't that. They were falling back, and Verstappen and Red Bull were ahead, which is a thing. And then I was scared, oh, is the safety car going to ruin it? Because as we've seen with races, teams get on different tyres, react differently. And at every point in this race, I was looking for, right, what is the moment where Mercedes are going to suddenly unlock this advantage? And I wondered if this tyre change was going to be the case after the Perez-induced VSC and then safety car. Matt?
Right. So the safety car engendered by Perez's power unit transmission, I am told, is being reported, but we all think it's an MGUK personally. Whatever it was, it went. And there was some yellow flags, and then very rapidly there was a virtual safety car, and it was timed just at the point where the teams thought, yeah, no, I think we might just get to the end if we bring in everybody who's not on the hard tire. Because obviously only the hard tire would be able to run that many laps. So immediately left out of this choice would be Vettel, who started on the hard, and Ricciardo, who started on the hard and had gotten the wave by from Ocon.
That looked like a legit overtake to me. That looked like Ocon defending as hard as he possibly could, and then Ricciardo just doing him. That's what it looked like.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. You can. I love your attempted trigger, but my boy finished the race with a pass, so I'm not going to feel too triggered today. Sure, if I'm being honest.
Matt. Quick diversion. Just realized that next season, because I'm on the Alonso bandwagon and you are Ocon Fosse. We're like a Renault fanboy podcast next year, by the way.
Kyle will love this.
Yeah. You absolutely will. Sorry. Continue, please. I was distracting you.
Yeah. So what it did effectively. Because the strategic position when everyone pitted, all the leaders pitted, all the way down to Vettel and Leclerc, who stayed out, and then Ricciardo afterwards. When they pitted, they went on the hard tire. Everyone was looking at doing a one stop. And what it did is it removed some strategic flexibility from Mercedes. Because as you say, we don't know on the medium tire if they might not have had pace around lap 16, 17, 18 to get into undercut range. We don't know if Bottas' tires went off, if Hamilton might have been able to either hold out and run faster laps, overcut him, or actually pass him on track. And crucially, Albon was already starting to fall back a little bit. He mostly seemed to run the race kind of in his own pace bubble. He was way faster than the McLarens, but he was usually several tenths off of the slowest of the top three. That might have multiplied to a point where it was an actual issue for Red Bull. All of that got short-circuited right then and there.
Very good points. Dr. Vidya Jim says it's going to be Alpine, not Renault. We're going to be Alpine Fosse. Alpine Fosse next season. Come on, Alpine! Ugh, now it feels... No, I can get on board. We can do that. We can adjust. And then we'll pretend that I never said that Renault were everybody's 10th favourite team. Me and Alex had a bit of a discussion on WhatsApp. And by discussion, I mean knives out, blood drawn, full on... they didn't even get that emotional, did it, Alex? But we had a disagreement about the relative pace of Hamilton and Bottas. I felt during the race that as the gap in that second stint from Valtteri Bottas to Max Verstappen lengthened, the Hamilton gap between Bottas to Bottas didn't. It stayed more or less in the same zone until he locked up. There was a feeling that perhaps Hamilton could have been quicker. And it was just surprising that to me that Mercedes let that gap just get bigger and bigger and bigger, ultimately without doing anything about it.
Partly, I think, because they don't think they could have got attacked Max anyway. So they were just happy to leave them where they were.
Well, even if they swapped? Even if they swapped, Hamilton gets released.
I don't think Hamilton was going for it. Because the one thing, the pattern you say about Hamilton whenever he's following Bottas was generally true. He stuck between 2 and 2.5 seconds, sometimes dropped to like 3-4 seconds and then would kind of eke it back. But that we never actually saw Lewis try and pounce.
No.
And I think when he did try and pounce, he then locked up and then screwed himself. So did Lewis probably did Lewis have a bit more pace in hand? Maybe. Would it have made a difference actually and given Mercedes a chance to go after Max? I don't think so. I think Max was in cruise mode for the whole race. So I see your merits of a case of would Lewis have gone quicker? Possibly. Would it have made a difference to the actual result? No, apart from one Mercedes would have been ahead of the other Mercedes.
Well, okay. So what I'm looking for here, Matt, is when we're talking about where the race was won and lost, with Verstappen, the two Mercedes, and Albon behind, was there anything Mercedes could have done? There was that kind of, there was that period with about 20 laps to go where every team radio, we've got the team radio on now on the app because I've just discovered it. It's so cool. Every team radio, you sit, how are the tyres? Not so good. Don't like it. How are your tyres? Oh, not so good. I don't like it. Verstappen, these tyres will never get to the end. We had a bit of a discussion a couple of weeks ago how the strategy seems to be let's eke out for a one stop, let's push for a one stop. And on tracks where it's hard to overtake, here, Singapore, among others, the push for the one stop is strong. So was it a case of they all just dropped their pace in order to go for that one stop? Was there anything Mercedes could have done?
After the safety car, there wasn't a lot they could have done other than drive faster. That was it. That was, and you know, it sounds very simple and
is
almost impossible to achieve. And again, you know, we're sort of going to get to the third reason where the race was won and lost. But really, before we leave it with Albon, because it wasn't just a virtual safety car. Let's remember, it turned into a safety car, and that had the additional and I think critical effect of closing all of the gaps down, which meant that you reset on, was it lap 13 in the, or 14, lap 13 into lap 13, I believe the safety car came in. You reset the race to the very start with everyone on tires that can go to the end. And as we look at Albon being in the pit window of Mercedes for the whole rest of the race, well, then that's absolutely critical. That gave them 5-6 seconds they didn't have before then.
You're right. Without Albon there, there was a small chance that they could try and do like what they did in Hungary last year, for example, get one of them on that set of fresh tires, softer tires, and just see where they end up. Because at that point, they didn't really have anything to lose, but they could have also like gained the fastest lap point.
Is it me, or is the chat room very, very Dutch heavy today? There's a lot. Well, welcome to our Dutch friends. And can I just say how brilliant Max Verstappen was? He really is desperately really good and dashing and good looking, like a World War II fighter pilot of old. He's basically Rick Mayall in Blackadder. Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, he was pretty mega today, wasn't he?
Absolutely.
Like, I know we'll make the joke because they're there, but he was actually pretty good today.
No, of course he was. And people are saying that Max Verstappen had said that the tyre games was a bit of bluff. And I'm trying to find the person who pointed to a bit of Channel 4 commentary. I'm sorry, I can't find it. But they said that the tyres are reported on a button. So all the radio tyre stuff is bluff. That's brilliant. I knew it. I knew there was something going on with that all along, Matt.
Yes, we've seen it in other sports. And it's not a surprise because they do know that the other teams listen to their radio channels. So they might have been trying to provoke Mercedes into blowing up their tires or trying some unusually low probability maneuver. But really, you know, if you're talking about what might they have done, well, on those tires, you might have said, okay, Lewis, we're going to put you on maximum push. Valtteri, we're going to let you conserve your tires. And Mark Verstappen, we're going to try and blow his tires up. They didn't do that. Or they might have reversed it, possibly because they were just trying to be fair amongst the drivers. But also, I think genuinely because they were concerned about putting that kind of stress on their power unit. And here's where I'm going to point out the way that the power unit affected. It's obvious with Perez going out with the Mercedes power unit, that had a direct effect on it. But less obvious, but still equally important, would be Russell's power unit going and killing, was it he who killed the long runs in FP2? The loss of the FP2 long runs.
Oh, yeah.
Was not an insignificant thing. And if I blamed it incorrectly on Mercedes Power Unit, my apologies.
Could they also have been, I don't want to say compromised, but it wouldn't have helped, the fact that they had to run these 2021 prototype tires as well. So not only are we at a Grand Prix where you only have one time-relevant session because of the twilight start time, but then you also lose some of that runtime because you're running tires for next year as well. When there's a post-race test, like in 2 days as well.
Okay, bit of a warning. I'm going to say something nice about Albon. Come on, Trumpets. I mean, you have been the biggest advocate of Albon this season. I believe from all the information we can glean that he's going to be a reserve driver next year. He's not on any of the post-season tests or anything like that. This looks like at least a pause in his career. I have been the most critical of his performances. I think he's not been up to scratch. I think it's correct that he make way for a driver this season, for next season, that can take advantage of the seat. However, this race, he did exactly what he was supposed to do. He made life hard for the Mercedes guys. He did what you would want a number two to do to Max Verstappen. And even though we're saying Mercedes couldn't have done much more, Albon played a big part of that. He really narrowed the options down for Mercedes.
Well, yeah, and his qualifying was, I think he was 3.5 tenths off Verstappen.
Okay. I mean, that's faint praise.
He quite literally just about halved his normal deficit.
Right, okay. That's, Verstappen. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
And is into what I would consider, just in my own watching of Formula One, sort of a relevant teammate deficit. Like, if you can qualify within 3 tenths of your teammate, you know, I think you are there or thereabouts in terms of that's acceptable to the team, particularly when you are good at wheel-to-wheel combat, which he absolutely showed us early on. And then he hung about in Mercedes' pit window and absolutely made it impossible for them to try any low probability or stupid maneuvers, which would have almost certainly gained them, if nothing else, a single point for fast lap, which went to Ricciardo instead.
Chris, let's be clear. Albon's aggression, his racing combat, and his attitude have not ever really been a question. It's been about raw pace. That's been the criticism.
Yeah, that raceability, 100% there. Although you would argue that he is driving a car much quicker than the cars he ends up racing. I think his issue has also been trying to work out how on earth to drive this particular car. They've had a few drivers try it, not be able to do it for some reason. Max can, which is great, but it seems to be a very difficult car to drive. Now, maybe if, you know, say Perez gets the seat and next season he aces it, then I honestly don't know what to make of that. But if he struggles as much as Gasly or Albon did, then certainly I think it makes a point in that case. There's some comments as well that Albon might end up going to FE. He won't. That grid is settled. He'll probably just take a reserve driver role.
Van Geen.
The question I have is, you know, we talk about is the car difficult to drive and things like that, and other drivers are struggling. Gasly struggled. Albon struggled. Ricciardo never struggled. Ricciardo was always there or thereabouts or sometimes quicker than Max. So what has fundamentally changed between Ricciardo leaving and now?
Well, for the year of Gasly, I don't believe a great deal changed. But you did see, and I'll point out his first drive in Spa, you did see why Red Bull wanted him in that seat relative to how Gasly was doing. And he did improve to the point of almost winning a race in Brazil during his first half season at Red Bull. For this season, they made a change in the front suspension that made it a lot trickier to drive. It made the car slower to drive. And you can look at the relative percentage gaps to Mercedes as a measure. It was slower for Max too, but relatively Max was much, much faster than Albon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Good. So Alban played his part today. Like the Arcadians in the movie 300. They were wild, but they played their part. So let's talk about the race winner. My goodness, Max Verstappen. And I'm not just talking about them because I'm getting eyes from Alex van Gijn with his Dutch heritage or all the angry people in the chat room. But look, the lad has done everything he possibly could have done today, and it meant something to him. That's what impressed me the most. He was on the radio. He was looking for every connotation that could go wrong. I'm worried about the tyres. Turn the engine down, because he's been hurt before, Alex. He's been through the mill. He's suffered behind these Mercedes for several seasons, and, you know, he's even going, look, guys, turn the engine. I've got capacity. And that shows how dominant he was today. Let's use the word, because it's true. Max Verstappen was dominant today, so much so that he was asking his team to turn his engine down.
Yeah, he was phenomenal. I mean, there's almost not much to say about him because he was so good.
Yeah.
He got off the line, which has actually been a bit of a bugbear for him this season. He got off the line well. He got to turn one in first and never looked back. But to be honest, what was actually more impressive was his performance yesterday. Because we all know Merck do have a way of turning it up in qualifying, which means that gets them ahead. And he still beat the Mercs yesterday. So I actually think, despite how impressive his performance was today, his qualifying was even better.
Matt?
To which I can only say, how much were they losing per lap with that MGUK thing? But yeah, you're right. He delivered when he had the chance. He stuck the knife in and he did not hesitate at all. It was very impressive. And it was an impressive drive, but there was not a lot of drama in it.
No, true. But did we not hear the defense for Vettel's dominant era and for all of Hamilton's dominance as well? Did we not hear that this is what makes a champion, the ability to be up ahead, to control everything, to see the whole race? And we've been waiting forever to see the champion, the true champion potential, Chris, of Max Verstappen. Was this not a champion's drive?
It was all the car.
Yeah, it's only because he's got the best car.
Do you know what I loved about after the Sakhir race was everyone was talking about Russell and saying, oh, this just proves that Formula One is all about the car. And I'm like, yeah, have you ever watched Formula One before? It's a team sport. It's mostly about the car.
Yeah.
There's no hiding that.
It's all the car stuff. It's just so, I'm sorry. It's so dumb. I'm sorry if you're one of those people, just the car people. But it's like saying, like, Alex Ferguson, oh, he was only the best manager because he was in charge of Manchester United and had millions of pounds to spend in an audience of 60,000 people generating revenue. It's a team sport. So, yeah. But look at Mercedes. When they didn't have Lewis Hamilton available, did they go, oh, well, I guess we've got to put, is it Ranganathan? Is that the F2 driver?
Oh, Raghunathan.
Raghunathan, yeah. Did they go, oh, we've got to put him in, we've got no choice? No, they're the best motorsport team in the world at the very top, and they could pick the very best drivers, and they chose to pick George Russell, just like they chose to pick Lewis Hamilton, just how they saw something in Valtteri Bottas. So it's a team game, and for drivers getting to those best teams, getting into the best car is part of the challenge.
So if anything disproves that, it's series like Formula 2, where, okay, yeah, some teams are better than others and have more resources, but there's still a considerable field spread considering it's a spec series.
Yeah, no, true. And look, and people are throwing figures about in the car saying, in the chat saying, oh, it's 90% car, it's 80% car. It could be that. But we've seen this season the difference it can make. So look, as we move on to the midfield, Matt, I mean, why don't we move to... Uh-oh, go on.
Yeah, I was going to say, you've just reminded me of a classic saying amongst orchestral musicians, which is, you know, the difference between a good conductor and a great conductor isn't much, but the difference between a good conductor and a bad conductor is everything. A bad conductor can wreck a performance. Anyone halfway competent will prevail. And I think Formula One is the same way with drivers.
But also, you talk about it's 90% the car, 10% the driver. When you're looking at Formula One, 10% is a lot. 10%, even if it was 5%, that's massive in pure performance states. If you're going to lose 5% of your maximum performance, but you can build that up with a driver, put the driver in. That's why they put Russell in rather than Raghunathan, because Russell can do the job.
We just launched a new car at work, and part of the selling point is that it's 1% better in terms of lap times compared to the previous generation car, which is like, it sounds so little, but it's a lot. It's a lot.
And look at the driver lineup now this year. Look what Hamilton can do that Bottas can't do. Look at what Leclerc's been able to do that Vettel hasn't been able to do. Citation needed, some mitigating circumstances there. Look at the difference between Verstappen and Albon, Perez and Stroll, Ricciardo and Ocon. Only kidding, Matt. We know Ocon has shaken off some rust. He's going to be awesome next year. Can't wait to see it. But look down the grid. Look down the grid in Formula One. You see the driver makes a difference. And of course, it is more a difference of 10 to 20% than 50 to 60%. We know that. Alex.
Low Stealth just said in the chat, 10% in quali and you have to get special permission to race.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Look, let's move on to the midfield battle a little bit as well, because McLaren and Racing Point had it all on the line for third position. I believe that was an important battle. I believe that is a fight that all the teams were taking seriously. And I put on Twitter today, I said, Chrissy, I said, what is the difference between Racing Point and McLaren over the course of the season? It was a season decider today between McLaren and Racing Point, and McLaren did everything they could.
First of all, I'd like to say this has been a fantastic battle to watch unfold. Each team has had its high moments, its low moments. There's been some fantastic battles on the track concerning that position in the championship, and also some dirty, dirty tricks off the track as well. It was political. It was a filthy fight, and I absolutely love it. They should get a penalty for that. Oh, this part's illegal. And, oh, do you see the way he did that? Oh, they should be reported to the stewards for that. I love it. Absolutely love it.
There was a lot of telling, wasn't there, Matt? There was a lot of dobbing in that you'd have got beat. Racing Point would have got beaten up at my school. I'll tell you that.
That's just like a Monday in Formula One, man. Everyone complains about everyone else being illegal. Oh, you know, if I was going to do this thing that I know Mercedes is doing, theoretically, FIA, would that be like a disqualifying penalty? I mean, yeah. Everybody asks that question in emails every Monday morning once they look at the photographs. So while I take your point, the political battle and the legal battle absolutely mattered, because after all, how many points was it that they lost for their illegal car?
15.
Or break ups?
15 points.
Yeah, that's kind of mattered just a bit.
Not only that, they lost 15 points with Perez's engine fire in Bahrain. They've definitely lost some points in Abu Dhabi as well. This is only just going off of like particularly recent races. I'd say McLaren over the course of the season has been a more reliable car, and that has helped. But obviously the biggest difference between those two teams is that Norris and Sainz push each other like crazy. When you look at their stats, they were so evenly matched
throughout the season. This is something for Kyle and Ellen on the season review, but I'll leave this with you guys, and you can email me spannersready@gmail.com or missedapexpodcast@gmail.com. Quickly give you the final driver points in that battle for third place. Sergio Perez, 125 points. Lance Stroll, 75 points. Carlos Sainz, 105. Lando Norris just behind on 97 points, so 8-point difference. So I will ask you, what has been the difference between Racing Point and McLaren this season? And I think we'll answer that on the race review, because I want to go back to the race, Matt. And let's move to the midfield a little bit, because it looked like Ferrari had some potential. And one of the advantages of training your children to follow the screens and follow the live timing is that my little daughter, who I've been neglecting her massively because she's not been that actively into F1. I've favoured the boy in this regard. Podcasting, the girl's much better. But in this regard, you know, I've been favouring the boy. Suddenly, as the pit stops are happening on the safety car, little Vivi, she's there going, "Dad, the Ferraris aren't pitting. They're staying on old tyres." I was like, she understands things. This is incredible. She's 8. But an interesting choice because of Hamilton being on the radio and saying, this is not a good strategy. You should have given me the opposite. And we've seen Bottas do this as well. Give me the opposite. Give me the opposite. And Mercedes being kind of hamstrung by their pursuit for fairness that they didn't split the strategy. Immediately from looking at Ferrari, it looked to validate pitting Hamilton because the Ferraris, they were kind of just sitting ducks. Leclerc more so than Vettel because Leclerc was positionally back. But yeah, I mean, I feel like Ferrari probably took the wrong call there.
Yeah, well, staying out. So first of all, let's understand we had the softest tires in the Pirelli range.
Ah, we did. Okay.
So the medium tire was actually a pretty soft tire relative. Normally we see 2, 3, 4, which is the middle. We saw 3, 4, 5 this time. So the medium tire they were running on was oftentimes the soft tire at most of the races. So there's that to consider. And outside of maybe Hamilton, who is a tire whisperer, it was painfully apparent after the safety car that they had made the wrong choice with Leclerc. Now, with Ricciardo and Vettel, who started on the hard tire, you had no other tire to go to. If you put them on another hard tire, they still had to have another stop. And the issue here is under the virtual safety car or under the safety car, pit stops cost way less time. So you're a fool not to take advantage. You're a fool not to take advantage of this. When you get the opportunity. And so everyone got off of the medium tire because it was really a soft tire and it wasn't going to go all that long into the race. And the cars didn't like it. The cars weren't spectacular on it anyway. The hard tire was looking to be the better tire to be on. And given that, it baffled me, Chris, that Ferrari would keep Leclerc out, and he plummeted down the order. I mean, it did not take him many laps to be chucked out the back. So what were they thinking, do you suppose?
Ferrari and bad strategy calls are just, they go hand in hand at this point. It's beyond like a meme, you know, after a whole season of this, well, two whole seasons of this. Really, and probably even further if you look back at even their championship fighting seasons as well.
But that said, I mean, we did have a bit of fun action from them because we will talk about Ferrari because Vettel is leading. I mean, Vettel properly passed Leclerc at the beginning of the race. Gene, did you see that pass? What did you think of it?
Which one was that? Sorry?
At the beginning when Vettel got in front of Leclerc. He was in front of him for the whole first stint.
Yeah, it was. Vettel's always been able to overtake. He's had his moments, but to have. I mean, I can't actually quite remember the move for this particular one, but he's usually very, very good at getting himself in that correct position. And he didn't hit his teammate, which is always great. But I quite like those two today because they both had sort of helmets that were talking to each other today because Leclerc had a Vettel lid on today saying, thank you, Seb. But no, the racing's always been good between those two.
I'm a little surprised we didn't hear a radio call to Seb. Move out of the way. Charles is on a quicker tire at the moment. But far be it from either of those drivers to ignore a team order call, though, to be fair. They've both got history of it.
Yeah, well, Vettel is going to be at which Ferrari team meeting next? There was no way any order to him was ever going to be listened to by Vettel, if you're asking me.
How many has he been to while he's still a Ferrari driver? How many has he actually been to? How many times has he visited Maranello since the announcement?
That midfield battle, though, Matt, it was intriguing. And, I mean, the Renaults, they showed promise. That was a nice reverse strategy from Ricciardo.
Well, as I was just saying, it was fascinating that he wound up where he did because the Renault was terrible on the medium tire. Ocon had no pace on it. In the first stint, Ricciardo, when he came out, had no pace on it at the end. And it was fortunate for them that he was ahead of Ocon. And it was also fortunate that being on the hard tire, there was no way they could pit him because otherwise he would have just been caught up in the mix with everybody else. But what was a really interesting marker there and this is the critical point, the safety car, was that with the Ferrari staying out, Vettel actually had okay pace. But everyone who was out behind him, with the exception of Gasly, was stuck behind him. Stroll was stuck behind him, Gasly passed Stroll, Gasly passed Vettel, and he lost a fair number of seconds. I believe it was 12 altogether. But those behind Stroll lost an additional 5 before Vettel finally pitted on lap 36, and that absolutely killed their race. I mean, Vettel single-handedly killed the race for more than half the midfield, which he had to feel good about, because he was defending with a terrible car on old tires, and he was, you could see he was just having the time of his life teaching them youngsters a thing or two.
Chris.
Goes to show the improvements they've made in the straight line speed of that car. They got a lot of confidence for their 2021 engine as well.
Well, they just dropped some baggage, didn't they? They've left their team principal at home for 3 races and binned another senior executive as well. That's why it's lighter down there. I don't know the politics of Ferrari. I'm just being hot take guy. I don't really know what's happening there.
Of course, their chairman just suddenly retired.
That's what I meant to say, yeah.
Yeah, just suddenly retired out of the blue before the race. And they've got a stand-in guy at the moment before there's a permanent replacement appointed. But it'll be interesting to see kind of how that changes the dynamic of the Formula One team, because Camilleri was famously a big advocate of the Formula One team, big supporter.
All right, so there's a few Danke Sebs in there. And for Sebastian Vettel fans, I think he's gone to a better place. Don't grieve. I think he's gone to a better place in his career. The Ferrari thing was a busted flush. And I think they've probably done a favour, him moving on. I think he can do great things. Alex, even if not just a championship ultimately, I think he can prove his reputation. He can fight. He's got equipment there to do well. And there are glory days ahead for Vettel.
I think Vettel can go there and shine. I think he'd fallen out of favour a little bit with Ferrari, so maybe probably wasn't getting the best out of that Ferrari package because he wasn't maybe being allowed to. Everything had moved over to Leclerc. I think Racing Point, Aston Martin, what they're going to be next season, will probably hand a lot of the reins over to Seb because Stroll obviously isn't ready to lead a team. So they'll give it to Vettel to lead and then keep moving forward.
Well, we're on Stroll then. Okay, yes, I'm not the biggest Stroll advocate, but I mean, again, Alex. Right, okay. Again, Alex.
Really? Never? You're not a Stroll fan?
I'm not a Stroll apologist. He's off pace.
Hey, he didn't have a catchphrase like I did.
Look. People keep yelling at me. They go, oh, he's had 2 podiums today. He's this year. He's done this. Like, okay, but the majority of the time, he's underperforming. He's had a couple of good results. One of those podiums was when his teammate literally overtook him on his way from the back of the field to the front of the field. So that podium for me is somewhat diminished in terms of, oh, that was an amazing performance. Monza, he had the chance to win after a safety car, some safety car fortune. He stuffed it at the second chicane at Monza and didn't win. Perez had that same opportunity, held on, he won it. Today, Stroll had the opportunity to take it to McLaren. He was the sole guy after Perez went out. And he struggled to get past Leclerc. He struggled to get past Vettel. He made mistakes. He lost out to Gasly. He kept going off track. Oh, Alex and Chris, tell me why I'm wrong. Is there a defense for Stroll in this situation? I think this highlighted a lot of his deficiencies.
Not in this particular race?
Alex, then Chris.
I think you're right. I think he was poor this weekend. He didn't quite get it working. He looked at sea today. He looked a bit lost, like he couldn't find any pace and was a bit concerned why everyone else was quicker than him and he couldn't figure it out. But he gets races like that. He'll have the odd race where he's red hot and he's doing very, very well for Stroll, but doing very, very well. But then the most of the time, he's kind of a little bit lost and just driving around without much momentum.
I think this particular race was not a great, great advert for him. Being the sole Racing Point left. Okay, right. The fate of our championship battle, getting third in the constructors, all rests on you. And before the safety car, he was within a few seconds of Sainz. So he passes Sainz, and then that would have sealed it. And then, of course, this pit lane incident, has been exonerated for. Since the end of the race. There were some people asking about that in the chat room. So nothing doing there. Really, what happened afterwards, you know, getting really struggling to get past the Ferraris, as Vanjie mentioned, but it was then getting done by Gasly and Ocon on the last lap as well that really kind of sealed the fate.
Vanjie.
On the Carlos Sainz thing and the whole thing in the pit lane, you could see where both teams were posturing from. So,
Otmar Szafnar.
That's the one. Otmar was on Sky and was saying, you know, because of it, it brought us out behind the Ferraris and that cost us all the time. And then Carlos was saying, no, the pit lane was really crazy, so I just kept on slowing down to make sure people had space to get out and being safe. So it was very, very clever the way that they have defended and attacked. And I think Carlos had it spot on, which is the case of, I'm just making sure I'm not in anyone's way.
Yeah, exactly what I mean. Dirty, dirty off-track tricks that were just so fantastically well played. And of course, some people were asking as well about like an unsafe release for Stroll. That was nothing. I mean, it was close, don't get me wrong, but unsafe, nah.
Yeah, well, it was very clever of him to mention the word safety because it's a safety regulation about driving too slowly in the pit lane, which is what he was being investigated for. And I believe the reason they waited till after the race was because they wanted to hear from him and from McLaren personally, because it had the potential, had he been disqualified, to affect the championship finishing order. It's not something you want to get wrong. But I want to go back to the time loss behind Vettel, because I think it shows that even Ricciardo, on the alternate strategy, Renault looked smart. He had a super finish. He came out in front of Gasly by about 1.2 seconds. Gasly lost 12 seconds behind Vettel because Stroll rocked up behind Vettel about lap 21. And by the time Gasly got round him and got round Vettel, it was a 12-second loss. By the time Vettel pitted Ocon, the gap to Ocon to Gasly, another 5 seconds. If Vettel hadn't been there, they would have all been 17 seconds up the road, and you would have seen Ricciardo pitting out just behind probably Kvyat, and it would have been an entirely different race. And so when I say that the alternate strategy might have appealed to Hamilton, but every bit of evidence I look at seems to suggest to me that unless he could have really managed that tire, he would have lost about 15 seconds because of the delta between the virtual safety car pit stop and a pit stop under green conditions.
I think the last bit of won and lost here in the midfield, seeing as McLaren kind of brought it home in that way, not only in the race, but in the championship, they delivered perfectly on the strategy, Matt. I mean, this is a team that seems to have maximised what they have this season, nearly in all regards. I know they've had a bit of unreliability. Sainz has been particularly unlucky, could be further ahead. It's been such an impressive season-long performance. And in this race, you have to say they nailed it.
Yes, well, I believe it was Perez who made the comment after the race that it's pretty remarkable what happens when you have a team with two really good drivers in it.
Well, he's not under contract anymore. So was that your point, Chris?
No. I was going to say it's quite timely to secure the additional millions from that third place in the Constructors when this morning they announced a minority stake being sold in the team just for a little bit of an extra dosh.
Yeah, well, there we go. I think, Matt, that is won and lost wrapped up in a nice bubble. Let's get the last comment from Chris there. He's going to say more things.
Just suddenly thinking.
Really?
Everyone seems to be looking at, it's a dangerous thing, right? You could hear the
clock. At last?
Turning in my head. People seem to be looking at, Red Bull were able to beat Mercedes today for whatever reason, and McLaren have got a very good car, and this must obviously, you know, be what we should expect for 2021. But it's worth remembering that 2021 still has quite significant regulation changes with downforce cuts for the sake of the tires. What did Christian Horner say on Friday? Only 60% of the car is going to be carried over into 2021.
Okay, before we get into any kind of news territory, it's a race review, Matt.
It is a race review, which is why I can't believe that no one has brought up the possibility that Mercedes marketing department picked up the phone. That, you know what would look really good, guys? not winning a race that doesn't matter at the end of the season.
Ooh, conspiracy theorist. But the marketing department did pull an absolute blinder, putting all the names of the people who contributed to the successes, all the people who've worked for them at the factory, at the power unit department, and at Petronas as well. And I was looking on that car and looking for people that we would recognize. And yet, sure enough, Derek was on there. Yeah, and it's nice that he was getting some recognition as well, and also some names we recognise from some of our side projects. And I know that those guys really, really appreciated it. A wonderful, wonderful touch. However, the writing was awful small, wasn't it? That kind of does demonstrate why we need the budget cap. Alex?
The most important person was on it as well, though. Roscoe was on it.
No, Roscoe wasn't on it. They he didn't was. Write Roscoe on it. They didn't. They
were apparently Roscoe. So. Okay. Apparently so.
That's quite funny. All right. We'll allow it. We'll allow it. Matt, we're moving fast towards the podium, so bear in mind that any additional talking points could be brought up within the awards. The last thing to say, I think, is that I've had my ear to the ground with Finnish media. I haven't heard anything about Charles Leclerc's pit violations. 4 violations. You're meant to get some kind of penalty. As far as I could count, he had 17 pit violation, track limit violations, and no penalty. What's going on there, Matt? Why?
Well, because he was told to slow down by 2 seconds or get a penalty.
So no.
He was
given,
it was like literally like the, I'm going to mention the I word here, the iRacing slowdown penalty.
Look, the rule is
2 seconds or get a penalty.
The rule is you get 3 off tracks and you get told, right, that's it. If you do it again, you get a penalty. But apparently for Leclerc, you also get, well, you should get a penalty. But actually, if you slow down a little bit, we'll let you off. Chris, this is the equivalent of parents saying to their kids, if you don't get out of that bath in 3 seconds, 1, 2, 2.5.
But didn't Stroll get told the same thing?
And that was for cutting the track. So that's different. This with Leclerc was specifically...
Well, am I confused
same
about
philosophy?
This?
Yeah, I think you might have got confused. I think it was Stroll who cut the track, therefore gaining an advantage and was told, lose some time or you'll get a penalty.
Okay.
Alex?
They couldn't give Leclerc a penalty for it, though, because they'd already given him a penalty the last race, and that maxes out his 1 penalty per season tally.
Okay, fair enough. I tell you what, guys, why don't we drift along? Why don't we drift along to the land of the podium? No, Matt, objections?
No, I wasn't sure where we were going next, and I was going to ask that question.
All right, well, you have it answered by this rights-free music that you can't complain that we use, because it's over 50 years old or something. I don't know, I just assumed that. I Googled it, and, well, so far, no one's sued us for using it. You're listening to Missed Apex Podcast. Thank you for spending a wonderful season with us, and thank you very, very much to our patrons who have kept us supported and have meant that Missed Apex Podcast literally has stayed afloat. Patreon.com/MissedApex if you want to join them. We have crossed important thresholds where the emphasis feels like, and I don't want to, I'm going to cross all my fingers and toes here. It feels like going into 2021, we're not talking about survive, we're talking about thrive. And that's from a personal point of view and from a project point of view here with Missed Apex Podcast. We want to stamp our name all across Formula One media next season. And we have some hope because of the support of our patrons and the people who go to our tip jar. So if you want to support us in our day-to-day running, give us the power to do more things, dedicate more time to content in 2021, patreon.com/MissedApex. If you don't like the Patreon model, I understand that. MissedApexPodcast.com/tip jar and all the stuff in the tip jar, unless you specifically say this is for Matt to down some whiskey to, which is perfectly valid, that gets ring fenced off into a kind of war chest where if we realize one of the podcast panel needs a mic, we go that way. If we realize we need outside broadcasting equipment, which we do if we get the opportunities, which I think we're going to get, we can upgrade in those departments. So the tip jar acts as our war chest to take the world on. We're really looking forward to 2021 and we hope you'll join us there. The last favor you could do us is tell everyone. If you share the link, missedapexpodcast.com, the video player is there, the audio player is there, So you can click play without having to find us on any apps. You can just see what we're all about. Why not share that on your social media? Tag us as well. Doesn't matter if you've got 5 followers, you might convert 1. If you've got 1,000 followers, you might convert 10. That's how we've done it for the last 7 years. It's person by person, grinding out from 1,000 in 2016 to 25,000, an audience of 25,000 per show on Race Reviews in 2020. 1 million downloads in the last 365 days, 500,000 YouTube views. Thank you. It's all from you telling people what we do. It's time for our rewards. All right, let's start with the good one, where we can be all positive and shiny and happy. This is the Good Thing Award. Chris Stevens, you're a shining, bubbling ball of positivity. As a public relations man, a PR man, as they say in the lingo, that's right, I know enough about your trade and I care about you enough to have learned that it is shortened to PR. For you, it's all about good spin. Who are you going to spin in a good way in this race?
I was really hoping that either that intro was going to last a little bit longer or you come to me like second or third or something so I could have a little bit more time to think about it. I might take the easy option and go for like Lando Norris.
Okay.
He edged out Sainz in the qualifying battle, which did come down to this finale. And also just drove a very, very good race that helped McLaren seal third in the championship.
Good. I like that positivity. Alex Van Gien, what's your good thing of award, the thing of the weekend award?
All the tributes. There was a lot of tributes. There's a lot of people leaving teams and doing different things. And there was some really nice stuff going on in the paddock. You had, as I mentioned earlier, Charles Leclerc has a helmet with Thank You Seb on it. Seb had a helmet with all the names of all his team members on it. You had the saying goodbye to Sainz, the saying goodbye to Perez. And lots of really nice stuff. And it made me think during the race, we've actually got a really nice grid of people these days. There's not knives out everywhere for everybody in the sport like they used to be. And everybody's, oh, F1 drivers used to be hard. And I'm like, no, they didn't. They actually used to just be a-holes, you know, and none of them were very nice to each other. We've now got a grid of really fighty, feisty drivers who are actually all really nice. I'm not supposed to like Ferrari drivers, but I like Charles Leclerc. You know, and with Sainz going there, I like Carlos Sainz. So actually, Ferrari have a team of drivers that I actually like. That's never happened in my entire fandom of Formula One.
I've changed my mind on Carlos Sainz. I thought he didn't. He was like cringy, like dad humor. He's not. He's hilarious. He's so funny with all the McLaren stuff. He's on the radio on the last race going in qualifying in the last race. I think it was where he went, I gave George Russell a toe. And then he gave me a toe. I guess that shows the relationship we have. So dry. Such a funny lad.
I have to mention Gust in the chat who mentions Kevin's donuts. Now, to anyone that actually watched, he literally foot to the floor. He was fully trying to blow up that car. Where you see with the others, they kind of half do it on the throttle, off the throttle. He was literally just foot to the floor and had it on full whack trying to blow that car up, which was quite funny.
I think as well in typical, like very uptight father trying to show I can be fun, which is what Formula One tends to be when it comes to donuts. They said, okay, you could, the top three can do donuts if they slowly go onto the pit straight.
No.
Which Kevin was not in the top three, nor was he on the pit straight. So, yeah, showing that rebellious nature that we kind of love about him.
Uh-oh. And Max missed out on his opportunity to, Max missed out on his opportunity to do donuts. Gutted.
Yep. But
maybe he can't do them.
He didn't miss his opportunity to just walk out of interviews with his chair. I love that. I love that stuff. Like, I'm Max Verstappen. I'm going to pick up the chair and walk off. You're right. You're right, Alex. There is a sense of positivity within the paddock. All the way down to, you know, Lando Norris trying to shoulder barge his way past Ricciardo to be interviewed first by the Sky team. And you're right. I like that. Why not have that? It's a sport. There's a camaraderie that doesn't mean they're not going to take it seriously and go wheel to wheel with each other. And I wonder how much sim racing plays a part in that, because a lot of them go online and they compete against each other and they understand that competition and chatting and being friendly can go hand in hand, you know. And they do well dealing with the general public when they do that kind of sim racing, because they chat to people in online forums. Before Roman Grosjean's accident, we were in a practice session Romain Grosjean is there, you know, and he's happy to say, oh, yes, hello, hi, it is Romain Grosjean. And I avoided getting lapped by him only just 2 seconds away at the checkered flag. Right, Matt, who was your thing of the weekend?
Or what? Well, I'm delighted that Jeansy brought up Magnussen because he deserves a shout. If for nothing else, the fact that he had the best start of anyone at this, his final race. And I was in the notes, the show notes for the beginning of the show, but we didn't get to it. The fact that there is now a Hamilton straight at Silverstone.
A Sir Lewis Hamilton straight. Thank you.
Very, very nice.
No, not yet.
But you know what? Because it's the last race. And yeah, Max winning the race was a big thing, regardless of how much tinfoil you put on your head. It was a big and beautiful and awesome thing. And it was such a validation for Honda to take pole as well.
Yeah.
But I'm going to take a step back and I'm going to say my thing of the weekend is the fact that Formula One managed to deliver us an entire season of racing in this most bizarre, strange, and challenging of years. Because there was a long while, and I know you agreed with me, there was a long while where the both of us thought, this just may not happen at all.
Okay, so Sean Kelly, F1 Statman, he's been on Missed Apex podcast a few times and on some other podcasts as well. I don't know why. Why, Sean? Only stay with us only. Come on, Sean. But he provides all the stats for all the Sky and the Channel 4 and all that. Top bloke as
broadcast.
Well. He's publicly said, you know, during the coronavirus outbreak and the pandemic, he had no work at all. He's completely freelance and he was stacking shelves at Walmart, I believe, for example, just doing what he needed to do to get through it. And he thanked F1. And I wasn't really thinking about this. He was like, all the people whose jobs rely on Formula One were saved by the fact that F1 put this calendar together. And also, it's very unlikely Miss Apex would have survived if they'd have just taken a year off. It would have been very, very, very difficult for us as well. Chris?
I personally have also had a lot of work saved by Formula One getting their stuff together. And I got to say, I'm really grateful for Formula One more than ever this year. Although I don't, you know, work directly in Formula One. I work with a lot of the support races. So Formula One getting their calendar together allowed Formula Two and Formula Three to get their calendars together and save a lot of work for me. But also because, you know, we talked about earlier this really condensed season, I've had a lot of incredibly stressful weekends and I've worked a lot of week, pretty much all, you know, weekends this season. So to have that done and then come back and watch some Formula One at the end of it to just sit back and unwind and it be such a great season as well has been fantastic. I'm very grateful for that.
And what else will be fantastic is your theme tune for our new-ish segment called Coulda, Shoulda, Woulda. Go for it, Chris.
Shoulda, coulda, woulda.
Oh, no, I was trying to... No, that doesn't work. I was trying to give you some background music. But shoulda, woulda, coulda. We'll work on it. We'll work on it for 2021. Trumpets, give us your shoulda, coulda, wouldas.
Well, I think the one that everyone would be most interested in is what if Perez's power unit hadn't failed? What would we have seen?
I think maybe a few additional points, perhaps. Was he feeling particularly bullish about going through the field? It was a tough ask on this track to come from the back.
No, I think in his car, he'd have to be looking at, well, I mean, if you were in a top team, and your name wasn't necessarily Albon, if you were in a top team, you'd be looking at P6 if you started there. So I think, yeah, absolutely, he would be looking at points, and Racing Point would have been looking at Stroll to get up and give McLaren a hard time, which, in the absence of the safety car, he did have some good pace for a while, at least, until Ocon caught him on the final lap.
Oh, go on. Come on. Have your moment, because you didn't do that for your Thing of the Weekend award. Go on. Tell us about the Ocon overtake and why that proves he's amazing and will beat Alonso.
Well, he will beat Alonso not because he's amazing. He will beat Alonso because he spent the last year in a Formula One team racing Formula One cars, whereas all Alonso's done is bomb around the track in a car that he drove 20 years ago.
Yeah, but did you hear the sounds? It was all like, meow, meow, and everyone was all like, oh my God, that's so much better than now. Noise is waste energy, people. Noise is waste. Noise is bad.
it is bad. But did you see how tiny the car was? And it just goes to prove the point that you can't, beyond a certain point, see lap time. Everyone's like, oh, it's awesome. It's awesome. And look, he was only 4 seconds slower than like the average race pace of last year's race. And I'm like, that's not even the qualifying time. I mean, it's not even in the same universe, that car, in terms of speed.
Yeah.
Over a single lap. But no one cares, because did you see how it changed direction? Because it weighs half as much and it's a third the length. You know, I mean, so lap time isn't always the most visible thing.
No, we've been saying it for years here. We've been saying it since 2014 when we had the knee-jerk reaction to you chuck a load of downforce on, because for half a season, the lap times were low, Alex.
F1 is about going the fastest. I know you say you can't see that, but it's about the fastest technology. It's about moving forward and getting faster.
I don't
the
agree.
Whole point of Formula One.
It's about being faster than anyone else, not being faster than ourselves last season.
It's about being fastest within a set of regulations, and that's the engineering challenge. We don't need to get ever faster and faster. That's for let the drag racers do that. let oval people go for the very fastest top speeds. Formula One is a competition between engineers and drivers to get the best driver car package across the line, and then fall apart at the end. That's what we should do in F1. Not be searching ever more for the fastest lap times. And I'm going to trigger just one person in particular, one person out there who I know listening to this will get very mad at this. But I think what it showed was, bring back groove tyres. That Renault with groove tyres. Oh, yeah. That would have been delicious. Snapping around. Oh, yeah. Oh, I can't generate heat. Oh, they're overheating too quickly. Groove tyres. Groovy, baby.
You do know he was running on normal slicks this weekend.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
I'm just checking. I'm just checking. That's not what you were saying.
No, it would have been even better. If you put the groove tyres on there, it would have proved that groove tyres should be back in F1. I'm talking to one person. I apologise. For everyone else...
Oh, no, you missed the apex.
Shut up with your positivity, Van Jean. Oh, isn't it so good? All the racing drivers, they all love each other and they get on well. That's not what we do at Missed Apex Podcast. We sit in our sheds and our living rooms and we slate people doing stuff we could never dream of. Who missed the apex for you?
Do I go for the one that everyone's going to agree with, or do I go for the controversial one?
Controversial one.
Stroll. He had the opportunity to rescue Racing Point today in the absence of his teammate and show that he was capable of moving forward in this team. And he fluffed it. And he was off the track and he got got told to slow down. And he was just never there. Mm. And, you know, I bet if you went through the season and calculated the points that he alone has lost, I think you've put Racing Point in third. Forget the issues with Perez. Forget other stuff. I think just him. And, you know, he showed all that in one race today.
Anyone rushing to defend? No? In that case, Chris Stevens. Dude, we should say where we can follow people. Alex is at Alex Van Jean, VanGeeN. What? On YouTube? Yeah, he's streaming. He thinks he's a streamer.
Yeah, I'm streaming stuff. So now I'm going to be actually streaming the Formula 3 and a bit of Formula 1. I'm going to do a lot of different things on the Wednesdays now when I do my streaming. I might put a vote on Twitter so you can tell me what I'm going to race. Because I want to try and spice it up a little bit.
All right, you've overplayed your part there. Chris Stevens at Chris on Racing. Who missed the apex for you?
This is maybe more of a coulda, shoulda, woulda. But I'm going to go for Mercedes, because of these K issues, and Lewis recovering from COVID is definitely more of a coulda, shoulda, woulda thing. And I think if they were running at 100%, we would have had a very, very interesting lead battle today.
Fair enough. I am going to actually give my Missed Apex award to Ferrari, because I haven't actually slated Ferrari that much this year, because they haven't been a threat to Lewis Hamilton or Mercedes. But that the call, it is a coin toss, but more often than not, it just feels like Ferrari do get these calls wrong. And on a track where track position, I think, was predictably important. You can kind of understand and mitigate that. However, they really were so immediately, obviously vulnerable that you have to question why they kept both cars out.
Yeah, I think I can answer that question. There are two possible answers. One is they thought it was preferred strategy and they didn't wish to put Leclerc on the secondary strategy. But I think more importantly, they always knew their race was going to be driving backwards as slowly as possible. And they felt like the best chance was just simply to get as far up the field as they can and then let him maintain. But unfortunately, the medium tire, which as I pointed out, was a soft tire in many, many other races, was never really going to be up to that task. They would have been much better off hitting him and having him, you know, fight with the others for the remnants. As far as who missed the apex for me, and I really hate to say it, it was Daniel Kvyat.
Kvyat. It was Daniel Kvyat.
He was ahead of Gasly until lap 7 3/4 when Gasly passed him, which sounds a bit awkward now that I say it out loud, but I'll move on. And why that mattered, and it's by the smallest of margins, the biggest of things happen. Why that mattered is he was because right after that, we had the safety car. So letting his teammate pass meant that he was at the back of a double stack. And instead of coming out where Gasly came out, he came out back of Ocon.
Mm.
And he was stuck there for the entire rest of the race. And he's the one whose name has been represented by the letters TBA on next year's sheet for Formula One drivers.
Yeah, Kvyat's not there next year. Chris.
Yeah, he's had some sort of decent performances in the last like 5 races or so, but it's all a little day late and a dollar short. I think if he'd been performing like this all season, that could have convinced them to keep Yuki Tsunoda in Formula 2 for another year.
On Kvyat, apparently I haven't seen it, but apparently in a post-race interview, he said he's not in the car and Tsunoda is.
Yeah.
Yeah, he sort of gave the game away there. But we've been reporting that we think Tsunoda is going to be in, as have many other outlets. Marco Borksik says, is nobody going to mention that basically in every pit stop in the last 5 or 6 races, Vettel has had issue with his front left tyre? Jack, as I said earlier, look, we don't think here at Mist Apex, we're not Vettel fans, but we think he's going to a better place next season. Not sure Ferrari have his best interests necessarily at heart right now.
Nevertheless, he's still saying to his mechanics on the radio in Italian at the end of the race.
Lovely. Absolute. Simply lovely.
After singing that song, he was also handing beers out to the team in the background.
That's absolutely wonderful. And I believe in the super chat, we had somebody drop a donation in the YouTube super chat. You can join us in the live chat by looking for Mist Apex Podcast. During the off season, we are going to be streaming about half of our shows live, so you can join us during the off season and come and get your comments in. There'll be less people, so we'll see you more often, etc. We are going to do a few more pre-records and some different things, which should be fun. I want to get in and do some in-depth interviews with each of the panel and put that together as like a get to know the panel kind of show, which I think will be fun as well. But Matt, who was our Super Chat donator so we can say thank you?
Well, we had 2 Super Chat donators. And are we skipping Pony?
No, just we'll do that next.
But the Super Chat donators, I have to thank Scott Doro for a very nice donation. Patreon and Christmas beverages, all you all deserve. Maybe tickle a mistletoe with the ones that allow Mist Apex. And Oxford Brooks Racing, which said, thank you all for the consistent content throughout the season. Our team loves putting on a race review while we design our next race car.
Oh, that is wonderful. I love hearing about where we are in your schedule. Honestly, I really do. Like, tell us where you listen to Mist Apex Podcast and what you think of the show. SpannersReady@gmail.com or MistApexPodcast@gmail.com as well.
Daddy, I want a pony. And I want it now.
Who's got one? Matt, you've got one?
I do. And for anyone who's listening to the team radio post-race on the F1 app, our friend, an entirely talented and deserving to be in Formula One driver, Lance Stroll, had an utter, I believe you Brits call it, go at his team.
Really?
About temperature in the tires. He's like, we need to work on keeping the temperature in our tires up. I was defenseless at the end of this race. He really, really just like... Yeah, it did not sound pretty. And the only thing I could think when I heard it was like, you're saying we, but I'm pretty sure none of the engineers are behind the wheel of the car, my friend. Like, even the temperature in the tires is kind of your responsibility, too.
Daddy,
And he'd been complaining about traction the whole race, but the difference between him and Perez, and now between a lot of the youngsters and a lot of the veterans, some of whom were leaving, or maybe not, is that ability.
I'm going to defend Stroll a tiny bit. And the only reason I'm going to defend Stroll a tiny bit is the way he generally talks sounds whiny. And I don't necessarily think he is always whining, but he has that, just that the way his voice is, I think he often comes across as moaning when he's not.
As a dad of 17 years, I disagree.
Fair enough. One award left, Matt. Literally three. Three comment of the weeks and a winner, please. Let's go.
So as I understand it, I've just been given liberty to go wild here because it's the end of the year. I'm going to meet Kevin Magnussen doing donuts.
I said what I said.
All right, fine. I will try to keep it down to a dull roar. I think we're going to go number one with Jelmer Vanderlei saying MKUKvid 19 about Mercedes' late season MKUK problems.
Right, okay, that's a pun, but because you're Dutch and Max Verstappen won, we'll allow it.
I think we're going to have to go for low stealth. The stewards investigated Leclerc and determined that his strategy was penalty enough.
Ouch. Okay. I mean, yeah. Also, Leclerc is bulletproof. Anyway, next.
And then I think the very last one is going to be, so many choices, so little time. I think we're going to go with Stuart Neal. Honda were as reliable as one of their Civic hatchbacks. Comment of
the week. We'll give it to you, Stuart Neal. Comment of the week. A winner. This has been Missed Apex Podcast. Please follow my crew, Alex Van Geen, at Alex VanGeen on Twitter. Follow him on YouTube. He fancies himself a streamer, and I've watched those streams, and they're fine. Like, they're okay. You should follow him on YouTube. He says big him up more. No, go and follow him on YouTube. Go check it out. Follow Chris Stevens at Chris on Racing. Chris, I do desperately hope we're going to see more of you next season and in the off season. Tell me it's so.
I hope so. Hopefully with a more normal racing year, then we should get things going good.
People have missed you. I've had emails. I've had people saying, have you dumped Chris Stevens? And I've had to go, no, it's just the schedule.
We invented a whole like backstory about like a falling out between you and me at one point.
Yeah, no, I've got to line up some Twitter beef. So I am scared that people I put on Twitter, I'm scared that people don't think that I think other people are knobheads. So I need to do some vocal hot take Twitter beefs. Alex Brundle offered to be one of my first Twitter beefs in the new year. So we might start a slanging match with him. I might go, Alex Brundle, you're the third best F2 commentator of 2020. There you go. There's my hot take. That's not true. He's really good. He's been all right. And so has Alex Jacks, actually. He's been really fantastic. He'll be moving to Channel 4. I'll be interested to see what that lineup is next year, actually. Follow my friend Matt Trump. It's at MattPT55. And he always wants you to follow his wife at A Weaver Writes on Twitter. She writes mucky books, romantic intrigue novels that you can purchase, an ideal Christmas gift, I would say, for your significant other. And the links to that will be in the show notes, and also the links to my other podcast endeavors, the Remain Indoors podcast. Loads to catch up on if you've not been listening to that in the past. Also, if you're a Spotify premium customer, go and check out Spanner's 90s Radio. Search for Spanner's 90s Radio on Spotify. I'll keep you company with some 90s tunes as well. Someone asked about our off-season schedule. Basically, every Sunday, there'll be some comment. We'll tell you on our social media if there's going to be a live stream or not. There's two shows coming up in the next week. One is our collaboration with the F1 subreddit, and Flip Jakobsen will be on with us on a pre-record, which will be released on Thursday. Then we'll do our race review on Sunday. But we will be with you from, I think it's like the 4th of January, to start our off-season content. We love the off-season because we get to do whatever we want. We're not bound by races, and we've got a lot of F1 and chat lined up for you over winter.
We talk a lot about the chat room, and before we say goodbye, can I read to you one more chat comment? Paolo Veri says, Thank you all. I came for the sport, but I'm staying for the people. You gift us a really good time. And I think that's a nice way to go.
I think it is. Well, whether you are going to see us again in March for the coming season, whether you'll be with us all through the off season, or whether you're just going to tune in for the race reviews, wherever we see you next, work hard, be kind, and have fun. This was Missed Apex. Yeah, what a 2020!
I still miss Wounds Heal. I think I might nick it and use it at the end of my streams.
Remember that Wounds Heal, Chicks Dig Scars, and Glory lasts forever. This, you can't have it. It's just that that is a very, it's very machismo, isn't it? That's very much born of, like, military days. Ah, Wounds Heal, look at me, yeah. I don't mind. You can blow my arm off, it's just a flesh wound, I will keep charging at you. But to be honest, as I'm now like a 40-year-old creaky dad, that less and less do I feel like any kind of warrior. You know, I can't pot around from room to room in my slippers, turning off lights, tutting, and then go, we're not heating up the whole street, you know, and then come up here and go, wound here, chick. It's just not part of my persona. It's slipping away.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.